We got breaking news. DNI Gabbert uncovers impeachment conspiracy against President Trump.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo for your Tuesday. We're here. It's April 14th, Will. You know what that means tomorrow is?
Tax day.
Is it still? Or did they move it? You know, there's
they
always
move
that.
It a lot because there's holidays.
I feel like
them.
I'm not hearing a lot of rumbling about it. Maybe people don't focus on the 15th as much as they used to. But that being said, it is April 14th. We got a packed show for you. Rick Grinnell's joining us in the next segment. We have a lot to unpack. There's a lot of news coming out, and a lot of it has to do with work the ACLJ has been involved in directly or indirectly. And of course, it is our Law and Justice Week that we just kicked off where donations are doubled. But we're going to kick off this show talking about our friend, former colleague. She was on this show for a number of years before, I don't know, she became the Director of National Intelligence, because that is the kind of people that we bring on here on Seculo. And we have a former Director of National Intelligence joining us in the next segment, Rick Grinnell.
That's right.
So you know what? That's the kind of group that we bring in to give you expert advice always when you are watching this show. But of course, our friend Tulsi Gabbard, and this one's really interesting, has really laid out in a document released today all of the conspiracy that was really going on behind the scenes for the 2020 election.
Correct.
So a lot of that first impeachment trial, of course, my dad did, my brother, you may remember that. All about that call with Ukraine and everything that happened in between them. I don't usually say this, but very rarely is there like a government document that I think you should go read in full. This is a good one. It is written in fairly plain English for the most part. And it's something that is fairly fascinating to really break down all the different layers that were happening and were happening by very prominent people. And we're not being taken care of even when brought to the attention of the right people.
That's right. What makes this so interesting is, one, it's something that we could have assumed, maybe, that sure, there was shenanigans and deep state individuals going after the president through this impeachment. But the Director of National Intelligence is able to lay it out. That's Tulsi Gabbard. Lay out, as you said, in plain English, how the Inspector General for the intelligence community. So that is supposed to be the watchdog to make sure that nefarious things aren't going on within the intelligence community. Weaponized his position, went beyond his statutory authority to push this whistleblower narrative to lead to the impeachment of President Trump. He relied on this whistleblower report, which was returned to him saying this isn't of urgent concern to get before Congress, the DOJ assessed. He went beyond the guardrails. He used non-firsthand reports.
And they kind of say that over and over again.
It was secondhand reports, as well as in the two witnesses that corroborated this, also had no firsthand knowledge. One of those witnesses was an author of the intelligence community assessment, which is the Russia hoax from 2016. This is the deep state at their worst.
Yeah, piling
and
on.
And it's all in transcripts, in government official documents. We see it here in black and white now. This wasn't just even a conspiracy hoax. This was a legitimate effort by multiple angles in the government, the Congress, as well as the Inspector General for the IC, to bring down a sitting president.
We're going to keep this conversation going. Up next is Rick Grinnell. He's going to be joining us here in the second segment early in the show today. But it's a perfect time to go ahead and call in if you got a question or comment right now. We got a few lines still open. 1-800-684-3110. 1-800-684-3110. It's Law and Justice Week. Let's throw that graphic up on the screen. There you go. Law and Justice. First time I've seen it. Double the difference today. Be a part of it. It's all during Double the Difference Month. But this week, we are specifically focusing on a lot of the work the ACLJ has been doing in the Supreme Court, whether that's historically for the last 35 plus years, or what we're doing even to this day. And there's work at the Supreme Court happening as we speak. And the ACLJ continues their fight. No matter how long it takes, we continue fighting to defend your rights and hold people accountable. So I want you to be a part of the team as well. Have your donation doubled today. ACLJ.org/justice. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Secula. Rick Grinnell's joining us overseas right now. Phone lines are open for you at 1-800-684-3110. I need to restate a bit of what we're talking about here because I've been looking at the numbers and a lot of you are just joining us right now. So, Will, maybe you can help set this up. Again, this is from our friend, former colleague, current DNI, Tulsi Gabbard, really put together a very exhaustive document that I believe, and we're going to try to get it up on our website, you should go read, because it's actually a very easy read compared to a lot of what you get out of Washington, D.C., with the details of what is happening, specifically with the conspiracy that was happening in the 2020 election season, during 2019 and throughout, of course, the first impeachment trials. So just to set that up a little bit, and then we'll get Rick's thoughts.
That's right. So in this report, it comes from transcripts that the DNI had access to of closed-door testimony from the intelligence community Inspector General Michael Atkinson. And what it goes to show is, one, how determined this Inspector General was at getting this whistleblower complaint before Congress. It also shows that the whistleblower, alleged whistleblower, lied to the Inspector General to try and force this along more quickly. It also shows that the witnesses and the whistleblower had no firsthand knowledge of this. It also shows that the Inspector General himself was concerned that if it was shut down, he was contacting other inspectors general, such as the State Department, Justice Department, to see if they would pick up where he got shut down, because they wanted this to be before Congress. And Rick, you have a little bit of history with this intelligence community inspector general, because, as we mentioned previously, you served as acting DNI during the first Trump administration.
Yeah, look, I was the DNI when Michael Atkinson was the IG, when he was the inspector general. And I saw him really not play fair, be extremely partisan. He had an attitude of he was out to get Trump and anyone associated with Trump. And so he was removed while I was DNI. He was removed by President Trump on a Friday night. I remember we removed him and he was no longer the inspector general. At the time, the media went crazy because, of course, they had this narrative that Donald Trump was trying to target people for their partisan views or for their non-support of his views. And what was clear is that Donald Trump was fixing an inspector general problem that we had, because we had an inspector general that wasn't looking at the facts, wasn't interested in the facts, wasn't interested in talking to people about the facts. He was interested in just getting Donald Trump, no matter what. And he ran ramshot over the actual process that an inspector general is supposed to do. Remember, the inspector general is there in agencies to be the guy that is absolutely above partisanship. He's there as a referee to call balls and strikes, to look at the situation and issue thoughtful reports about the political attacks that come from the media and from the opposition. This guy was a phony and a fraud. He was an activist out to get Trump, and he posed as someone who was going to be a referee. And I'm very glad that President Trump fired him in 2020. It was in early April of 2020. And it's even greater irony that now Tulsi Gabbard, former Democrat, looks at the inspector general's process to say he didn't follow the rules. He was just gung-ho on trying to get Trump. He didn't follow the facts. He didn't talk to people. It was a political chop job, and she has now outed him. And we now look backwards and say it was the right thing to do, and it never should have happened.
Rick, are you surprised at all when you look at this document? And like I said, I think our audience should go read it, because it's intensive, but it's not hard to read, and it's actually all very much in plain English. So much so that they were keeping these conversations going very actively. Not in some sort of code, not really in secrecy. As someone who's been on the inside, does it surprise you at all of kind of how haphazard they were with being, I guess you'd say, honest internally at what the goal was?
Yeah, look, they felt a sense of protection from their colleagues because all of their colleagues felt the same way. But this makes me realize, in order to clean up the intelligence community, we really have to clean up all of the people that are not there to find factual information that's going to help protect our national security. We have too many people in the intelligence community that are just out to get President Trump, out to get conservatives. They play partisan politics with intel. It makes us less safe as a country. And I think we've got to do a more holistic review of those in the intelligence community that have already proven to fail us and be partisan and get rid of them.
Rick, one of the more interesting angles in this, and I think it's something that we probably haven't seen before. If it was reported, it wasn't necessarily directly from the government. But one of the witnesses that this inspector general used to corroborate the alleged whistleblower admitted that he was one of the authors of the Obama-ordered ICA that changed everything, that started the Russia collusion hoax back in 2016 after the election when President Trump was going into office. This individual actually worked with Peter Strzok. And so what we see here, when we've heard the director, Gabbard, speak of this grand conspiracy, and when people wonder, you know, will there be accountability? What we're seeing now is that it's the same people trying to get at the same goal over multiple years and weaponizing government against a duly elected president of the United States. And one, I guess it shouldn't surprise us, but does it? Does it surprise you that it's not just a different set of rogue actors within the deep state? It's the sum of the same people.
It doesn't surprise me. I think the bureaucracy is out of control in many ways. What does surprise me is that we have a lazy media that's not interested in outing those people paid by U.S. taxpayers who are not doing their job, who are acting out in partisan ways and pretending to be the referee. In this particular case, this is like the arsonist not only calling the fire department afterwards, but being in charge of the investigation to see who started the fire.
Rick, this is a, when we talk about these big topics, and I think it can get a little heady, we get caught up in sort of the hoopla of what's happening around pop culture and what's happening in the world. But these are serious issues. These are issues that the American people need to be exposed to in a way that maybe the mainstream media, like you said, doesn't necessarily focus on. They'll put it up. It'll be one of the rotating five or six stories. But we were watching the news this morning, Will, and it was everything from, a parrot that can now swim in its own submarine, all this. And you're talking about real, I mean, not that that's not fun, and not that we all don't share it. And trust me, my wife had sent that to me earlier. But when you're talking about the main topics of what our news media should be covering, it's why I'm very thankful that we're able to not have anyone above us to control what we're talking about. And the numbers today show that the crowd who would typically be interested in this is more interested than ever to really find out what's going on, to hopefully get the answers.
Look, this is the week that we pay taxes. This is the week that Americans are dealing with the amount of money taken out of their check. And they're trying to see, did they take out too much? Do I get a refund or do I owe money? This is all about taxes to the federal government. When you pay your taxes, you expect that the people you're paying for, the bureaucrats, to actually be real public servants, not out to get a certain side. We've been disappointed over and over. It's going to continue to happen, and we've got to have leaders that will gut it.
Rick, thanks so much for joining us today. Look, we have a packed rest of the show. And look, you can find out a lot of great content on our website. If you haven't spent some time there, go to aclj.org. Of course, you can support financially. We are during our Law and Justice Week, and look, feels very appropriate right now as we have this discussion. Be a part of Law and Justice Week as your donations are doubled at aclj.org. But spend some time there as well. Look, Rick was our special guest contributor today. So from here on out, it's me and Will.
But we do have something very big to talk about in the next segment as well.
That's right.
Another government report. This went out of the Department of Justice. It is shocking. And it also shows the hard work of the ACLJ directly in the report. So stick around, share it with your friends, hit the like button, subscribe, and comment, because we've got a lot coming up.
You gave them so much to do, Will.
Do everything.
You just gave them 7. Hype the video, too. It's a thing.
How you do that?
You click hype. Actually, I don't think you can hype our channel. I think we're too big. Never mind. I think you got to be under, you know, 500,000, and we're well over that, you know, here at the ACLJ. So with that, phone lines are open. I want to hear from you. 1-800-684-3110. 1-800-684-3110. Be a part of the show today by calling in, but also be a part of the team. You're going to hear in the next segment, again, how the ACLJ work directly affects what's going on in the top levels of our government. We are the ones doing the hard work for you, but you are part of the team at ACLJ.org. Welcome to Seculo. Welcome back. That's what I meant. Well, a little rusty. I took a day off. This is what happens.
How dare you?
We do have some calls coming in. We're going to shift topics here in a minute, but a lot of you are calling in specifically about Tulsi Gabbard and this document that was released. Interesting one that we've been discussing for the last 20 minutes or so. But I want to take some calls about that. Then we're going to move on to some work the ACLJ is doing. But if you're on hold for that, just stay on hold. We'll circle back to it. Robert, Maryland, line one, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I wanted to ask the both of you, what other sources and methods did the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, use to gather the information to find out there was this conspiracy, especially by members of Congress, but not only by them, to impeach President Trump?
Well, Robert, a lot of it was based off of 2 transcripts that the intelligence community inspector general gave before the House Intelligence Committee. Now, remember, that was the committee that spearheaded the impeachment of President Trump. That was Adam Schiff's committee. And you even see in this that the, quote, whistleblower lied to the inspector general to try and get this urgent concern matter through. They knew the loopholes. And specifically, the whistleblower told the inspector general, I have not communicated to Congress about this, because he was wanting it to be officially transmitted from the intelligence community inspector general to Congress. In reality, he had been speaking with Adam Schiff, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee. So the lie was to try and get this to be quicker so that they could try to do something to derail a presidential bid. Also, we know that these transcripts were withheld from the Judiciary Committee during the impeachment trial, and they were kept locked in a safe until recently, March 24th, the House Intelligence Committee chairman, Rick Crawford, led a vote to release the transcripts. So they were trying, as we saw with the FBI, with the Russia hoax, how James Comey would put stuff in burn bags and locked away, they were trying to do something very similar here with the Intelligence Committee in the House, as well as the Inspector General and the intelligence community at large. So once again, trying to play with the rules, in a way defraud the American people by making it think what was happening actually wasn't happening. And what we see is that they got an impeachment that they were looking for. We know firsthand. We lived through that. Your dad was the leader of the impeachment defense team for President Trump. Right, the leader of the impeachment defense team for President Trump, and Jordan as well, worked on that. We saw them in the well of the Senate for weeks on that.
I've seen a few people ask specifically for the name of this document. We are actually working right now to get it up on ACLJ.org, and we'll try to get to that specifically soon. I think we can get the name of the document. If you are interested in searching it, give us a second. We'll pull it up.
Well, and specifically, if you go to DNI.gov, and go to the news section, there is a titled article, DNI Tulsi Gabbard Exposes Conspiracy Used by Congress to Impeach President Trump. However, our team is working to get that directly linked on our website right now so that you can go to ACLJ.org and go to the news section, and it'll be there shortly. Or if you're listening later, it will already be there.
Yep. So give us a minute. We'll do that. We'll try to even get the link in the comments for a lot of you that are talking about this. Look, we only got about 5 minutes here in this segment. I want you to give me a call at 1-800-684-3110. Get in line for the next half hour. We're going to take a lot of calls. But we do have some work that the ACLJ has been directly involved in a way that you're going to love here. Because, look, we talk a lot about the work of the ACLJ. And you have to trust us that we are out there and that our team is fighting for all of you. But then there are times where it gets a little bit even more corroborated. And sometimes it is from these big documents that come in. This one, look, I don't even know if we have time to really break it down, but let's scale it down and we'll come back with it as
We're going to continue. I could talk for days about this because it is incredible.
Too many days.
This is a new report released this morning by the Department of Justice titled "The Biden Administration's Weaponization of the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act, the FACE Act." This is an 800-page report, 880, I believe, page report. I didn't print the whole thing. I only printed about the first 40 pages.
Not going to waste the paper.
Well, exactly, because too much time to get through. Yeah. However, here's what the report was doing. This is a part of looking into how the Biden administration weaponized the federal government against conservatives and people of faith and Christians. And what the DOJ found is that they used the FACE Act, as we knew, as we have seen throughout the work of the ACLJ, that the DOJ would go after pro-life individuals and use that law, the FACE Act, specifically to target them. We found a dual system of justice, or that's what the DOJ has shown in this report. There is a dual system of justice. They use the FACE Act to go after pro-lifers, and they use it to shield pro-abortion businesses and clinics. And specifically, when the Dobbs decision came out in 2022, around June, we all saw it. There was firebombing of clinics. There was defacing of clinics. Jane's Revenge was taking credit for this group. And the Biden administration, what did they do? Nothing. They sat on it. And this report finds, and this is on page 7 of it. This is up at ACLJ.org, a link to it. The article title is "Bombshell DOJ Report Confirms ACLJ Warning of Biden Weaponization." But listen to this, page 7.
Yep.
"The Biden DOJ's interactions with pro-life groups were limited. In August of 2022, so months after these attacks were happening, several months after Dobbs, the American Center for Law and Justice sent a letter to the DOJ raising concerns that pregnancy resource centers had been, quote, firebombed and vandalized across the nation, and reiterating that such facilities are covered by the FACE Act. A CRT, which is the task force that was looking into these type of things, a CRT attorney circulated the letter," so the letter signed by Jordan, "after which the Deputy Assistant Attorney General, Robert Moosey, inquired on the status of the task force meeting for pro-life clinics. The task force director, CRT trial attorney Sanjay Patel, responded that he was waiting on the FBI to set up a call with the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops to put CRT in touch with pro-life facilities. Then the Deputy Assistant Attorney General did a quick Google search to identify who maybe they could reach out to." So months after, they had done nothing. We sent a letter. They were like, oh, maybe we should act like we're doing something. One guy says, we're just waiting on the FBI. The Deputy Assistant Attorney General Googled pro-life resource center, found one. They didn't actually reach out until September. Meanwhile, it was front page news that people were firebombing clinics in Pennsylvania, D.C., New York, all around the country that were pro-life centers. Yeah, DOJ under Biden was doing nothing, but it gets a lot worse, and we'll tell you that coming up.
Yeah, we'll get to that in the next half hour of the show. And you may be wondering, well, how do I get that half hour? Well, if you're watching on YouTube or Rumble or ACLJ.org, just stay here. You don't go anywhere. We'll be back in less than a minute. But if you are listening on terrestrial radio, you may have to switch over. Some networks don't carry the full hour. Find us on ACLJ.org. Even if you're listening to this later, the full show, the full hour is always available every day. We do it live from 12 to 1 p.m. Eastern time, and it's available immediately archived. Every day, be a part of the team right now. Go to our YouTube channel, go to ACLJ.org, and get the ACLJ app. There's a lot of different ways. We try to make sure the show is available in every platform that we can. And we do that at absolutely no cost. And that only happens, and by the way, this kind of work where the ACLJ shows up in these documents as the source because you decided to become an ACLJ champion or an ACLJ member. I need you to do that today. Think about it. Your donations are doubled today through the rest of the month, but it's Law and Justice Week. Be a part of it.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Here we go, second half hour of Seculo. Thanks for joining us today. It is Tuesday. It's April 14th. That's right. It's tax week. It's also Law and Justice Week. That is where the ACLJ celebrates and showcases our work at the Supreme Court of the United States. Stuff that has been going on, well, since before we were really old enough to really know what was happening.
Exactly.
Yeah, the ACLJ has been around for, in some form or fashion, for over 40 years as an organization, as the brand, the ACLJ, the American Center for Law and Justice, for this will be our 36th, 37th year, somewhere around there. And I want you to be a part of that as well. We have a few lines open right now at 1-800-684-3110. Before we went to break, we were discussing how the ACLJ gets directly involved. You may be hearing, Logan, this sounds like a big fundraising pitch. And of course, we would love your financial support during these special months that we are able to offer these sort of matching double your donation months. It's really important. It's a great time to support the work of the ACLJ. However, this is when we're able to sort of, will, as you say, show your work. And the ACLJ showed up directly in a document today. Of course, we have been on the forefront of the fight for life since really day one, since it became an issue in America. And we saw a few years ago something we never thought we'd see. You know, we always probed for it, prayed for it, we fought for it, which was the overturning of Roe versus Wade. But what we also know, when that happened, it created a different, let's say, a vibe shift in the world towards even people who were pro-life. All of a sudden, not only were you the, you were no longer the underdog fighting and the little guy who was, you know, the enemy, you're now the big dog, you know, being attacked. And with that, we saw extensive amounts of attacks on pro-life pregnancy centers. Centers that, if you've ever been to and ever visited, ever talked to people there, usually run by volunteers, often run by people who really, I mean, when you talk to them, the sweetest, kindest people who are there just because they want to protect babies, protect mothers and fathers, you know, provide everything, like I've said, from, you know, prenatal to postnatal. Sometimes they do birthday parties, they close, they'll formula day, all of these kind of things that happen in these amazing centers. But they became the target of violent attacks. And we can at least now show in this document that was released, Will, maybe we can reset that a little bit for those just joining for the second half hour.
That's right.
Not only was the ACLJ directly involved, but how little, until we got involved, was being done.
Once again, also, when there's a Democrat in office that's anti-life and anti-Christian, it still means you can't let up the fight. It means you still send letters from the ACLJ, from Jordan Seculo, the executive director here, to say, hey, you better be doing your job. And that comes in this report, the Biden administration's weaponization of the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act, the FACE Act, is released by the DOJ today. It was spearheaded actually by Attorney General Pam Bondi. This was something that she said has to happen. Obviously, now Todd Blanche, the acting Attorney General, it also was important to him to get this out, to make sure this report got out. But here's what we see. That Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, when there was a heartbeat bill that passed in Texas, he made sure everyone, he restarted this task force and made sure everyone called the pro-abortion groups, called Planned Parenthood, called the National Abortion Federation, called them and said, hey, we got your back. We're watching to make sure no one attacks your clinics or tries to obstruct people entering them. What happened after Dobbs was released and we saw violence against pro-life pregnancy resource centers? Nothing. Nothing until we sent a letter and said, hey, why is nothing happening? Why is there not a press statement even saying we are looking out for this? And then you see they scrambled after we sent that letter. And it still took another month for them to meet and reach out to pregnancy resource centers. But we actually have more that's even more shocking. We'll talk to you about it in the next segment, because what they were doing colluding with pro-abortion groups will shock you.
That's right. And I want to hear from you as well. We got two segments left. I want to fill that also with your voices, whether it's on the Tulsi Gabbard report or this one specifically, or if you have other topics you want to hit, give me a call at 1-800-684-3110. Again, 1-800-684-3110. When we're in break, if you're watching online right now and you're brand new to the show, and about half of you have never seen us before, I encourage you, instead of saying financially support, hit that subscribe button and tell me where you're watching from. We'll be right back. Hey, there we go. That's how I cue the music, Will.
I like it.
All right. A little technical difficulty there. It's all right. Hey, listen. We got about three lines open right now. I want to hear from you. 1-800-684-3110. 1-800-684-3110. Continuing to talk about the work of the ACLJ. We just got a couple great calls who've come in. I want to make sure we get to them coming up. So stay on hold. Martin and Marion, I'm going to get to both of you here. We do need to do a little bit of a cleanup here. Tell people what That's we're right. talking about here as we expand upon the topic at hand, which is the ACLJ obviously having a big hand in keep making sure there at least was some work being done after virtual silence from violent attacks on whether it was pro-life pregnancy centers or anything like that.
That's right. And remember, they weren't even looking at it, right, according to this report from the Department of Justice. This isn't us putting this report out.
Yeah.
They were looking at their files and could trace it. The Department of Justice under Merrick Garland and ultimately President Biden did nothing after these clinics were attacked, firebombed, burned out, defaced, threatened, until the ACLJ sent a letter and said, what are you doing about this? Remember, those clinics are protected under the FACE Act too. Then they had, instead of, oh, let's go and figure out who we can talk to, they just did a Google search, and that deputy assistant attorney general then handed it off to an intern. It's like, can you look a little bit more into this? They eventually did talk to three groups about what they could be on the lookout for. But now I want to contrast that, because also those groups, they were concerned about giving them their resource material, the Department of Justice's own resource material on the FACE Act, because they said it's really heavily biased towards abortion clinics, and most of the sources in our material is just Planned Parenthood. And also, a lot of people may dispute whether or not these pro-life resource centers are actually healthcare. So this is the word of Biden's DOJ. Now let's contrast it. Here's what they were doing with the pro-abortion groups. When the Dobbs decision came down and overturned Roe v. Wade, the attorney general asked all task force members to start contacting National Abortion Federation, Planned Parenthood, another pro-choice group, pro-abortion group. And he said that, give them this message. The attorney general, under my leadership, said the Justice Department will work tirelessly to protect and advance reproductive freedom. They then met with 14 outside groups, NARAL, Planned Parenthood, Center for Reproductive Rights, as well as 10 other groups. They have documents where the Assistant Attorney General praised their amazing relationship with the National Abortion Foundation. They also coordinated very closely. They were giving information both ways. It was a two-way street. But here's what really shocked me, because we start thinking about how they went after so many pro-life individuals, grandmothers, aggressively prosecuting them under the Biden administration. Here is from a principal deputy chief under it's the supervisor of the attorney that originally said, we're waiting on the FBI, we're waiting to hear back from them. Talking about the National Abortion Federation, they said is one of the three main reproductive health care provider groups in the country. Others are Planned Parenthood and the Feminist Majority. We've worked with the NAF for decades. NAF regularly refers potential FACE Act violations and other threats to RHCPs, helping us liaise with clinics and staff. Let us know about upcoming events that might result in security concerns so we can notify the FBI and U.S. Marshals Service. Because they are NGOs, they can poke around on the internet in ways we can't, and they have shared leads with us, etc. They are talking about the National Abortion Federation of being basically a external group, because the DOJ themselves can't do what the NGO can do, that's a non-government organization. That would be a violation of people's civil rights. Yeah. the way that they would go and get this information, trailing them on their digital footprint, would be a violation of their Fourth Amendment rights, First Amendment rights. However, if the NGOs do it and feed us the information, that's the loophole.
Yeah.
And when they start talking about the ICE being the secret police force and all these things that the left talks about now, and how the Trump administration is weaponizing the DOJ against his enemies and turning it into a political machine, no, don't believe it. Shut that conversation down. That's exactly what they were using pro-abortion providers, the National Abortion Federation, to do their dirty work, be their eyes and ears out there, be a secret police for them, and put these tips. But then they were also feeding them information as well. It's crazy when you read what's in this report.
Yeah, you should absolutely read it. Look, a lot of different reports came out today. And look, this is nothing new for the ACLJ. Like I said, we've been at this for so many decades. And one of the people on the phone right now who just called in, again, unplanned, someone who has been a part of that fight, who has seen it firsthand and was involved maybe in the early days from when really the ACLJ just got started in the work protecting pro-life speech. And I want to take this call. Marion is an ACLJ champion as well. Marion in Texas, go ahead.
Yes, first of all, you did a great job of summarizing all the bias on the other side of the picture.
It's a lot, Marion.
I was introduced to Jay Sekulow and ACLJ back when Operation Rescue was in a force, and a lot of people might not know what that is, but that's where we would go to abortion meals peacefully, and we would sit there and try to talk to the girls, and we would be arrested because we were blocking doors and stuff peacefully. And then they had a rescue that they were going to be having in Kansas City. And the judge there said, anybody that comes over here, you better bring your toothbrush because you're going to stay here a long time. So the first thing I packed when I went to Kansas City was my toothbrush. Mm-hmm. And we went up there and we had 50 to 60 people that were arrested up there. And before we were arrested at one of the events, Jay Sekulow was there trying to talk to the media, and we were there listening to him peacefully, and there was a lot of screaming and hollering from the pro-aborts on the other side trying to drown out Jay Sekulow's voice and stuff. And then that night when it came out on the news, it showed about how they had some kind of a judge or attorney there, and he was a pro-abort, and they had him seated in an office with, you know, calm conditions and a suit on,
right.
Made him look very professional. Then they used your side to show, look at all these nutcases that are pro-life are screaming and hollering, which was the other side. And I've been a follower of y'all ever since then, and y'all have done a tremendous job taking cases to court, defending people and things like that. In fact, I got arrested several times in San Antonio. I didn't know you guys could help me or anything like that, but it didn't matter. I ended up defending myself. And when I went to court, they had a thing called motion in limine, which is supposed to make people who are going to court not have their past offenses tried. If you were a burglar and you had four burglars, they couldn't bring that up. That's called motion in limine.
Yeah.
But what they did, the court system did to the pro-lifers, we couldn't defend ourselves the way we wanted to be defended, which was a defense of necessity that we were there to save lives.
Yeah, Marion,
in defense of third
I'm
person.
Only,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm only cutting off because we're running out of time for this segment. But look, that story that you brought up in Kansas City, very well documented. It's actually been part of a number of our films. We put those segments in. Maybe we can pull that for a future show so you can see what it was like, specifically back in, like you said, in the 80s and 90s, where there were those setups where, you know, people like my dad were put in front of crowds of angry hordes of pro-life and pro-choice protesters, and then made to be like, this was what we wanted or we chose. And of course, they put them out there in 100 degrees, and they put, like you said, that judge there in a beautiful studio. That judge actually ended up having to fully recuse himself.
It's one of the greatest moments
story.
In history.
We can probably pull that for a future show. Again, these are sort of the war stories that come after being decades and decades of having the ACLJ in these fights. It's crazy sometimes that these fights still happen. Now some of them don't. I'll be honest. We do get, obviously, a kid who can't bring their Bible to school, and we see the pushback still happens from school boards. We see the pushback that happens from teachers. Often those can be resolved very quickly. A letter they get from the American Center for Law and Justice, they don't want to go to court, and it happens. But sometimes they don't. And sometimes we're still in these same fights. And just like the Dobbs decision happened, Roe versus Wade was overturned. Look, there's no guarantees that that doesn't flop another way and all of a sudden we're back where we started. Could be a while. It would have to be a while just based on the time it takes to get to the Supreme Court. But you never know. Different people in office, different Supreme Court. The world can change in those 30 or 40 years very, very rapidly. We all know that. With that, we got one more segment left. We've got two lines open. I want to hear from you. Give me a call. That's at 1-800-684-3110. Of course, our legal work is front and center this week. It is Law and Justice Week. I want you to be a part of it today because throughout this month, we're able to offer a Double the Difference drive, which is your donation is doubled. But this week, we're going to focus on the legal work. We'll do the media work, well, one week. But, you know, if you like this show still, we provide it absolutely no cost, and we have no one above us telling us what we can or can't say, and that is because you support us financially. That's at aclj.org. We'll be right back with your calls and comments coming right up. Welcome back, Secula. Last segment of the day. Will just have me, you know, read some of the actual words that came directly from this report. And it is pretty alarming when you know that is what was going on, Will. Inside, I mean, yes, it was the Biden administration. But still, you know, you do hold out hope that the bias can only go to a certain level.
Once again, remember, they weren't looking at the crimes against pro-life centers until we sent a letter and said, why aren't you looking at this? Meanwhile, these pro-abortion groups, this is the level of information they were giving the Department of Justice. Remember that caller we just had that was arrested, and that was local law enforcement. Imagine the era of the 80s if the pro-abortion groups were able to have social media and give these dossiers to the federal government. It says, in advance of the national event by Operation Save America, National Abortion Federation compiled a law enforcement resource guide on the group and its event. The guide broke down the schedule of events, including protests and meetings at local churches, before providing detailed dossiers of, quote, anti-choice individuals, end quote, expected to attend, including pro-life pastors and speakers. These dossiers included significant amounts of personal identifying information, such as birth dates, addresses, contact information, physical descriptions, photographs, names of family and close associates, including photographs of minor children, affiliated groups, history of pro-life and faith-based activities, and driver's license numbers. The guide included information about prior protests that ultimately were the basis for Biden DOJ FACE Act charges. The pro-abortion groups, Planned Parenthood, National Abortion Federation, and many others were an extension of the Biden DOJ. It was a two-way street of communication. They were using the outside groups to get around constitutional constraints on the Department of Justice. And meanwhile, if you were pro-life, if you were a pastor that was defending your son from a violent protester that was pro-choice, and you defended your son against him, they raided your house pre-dawn, took you to trial where you got acquitted. Remember that? That happened under the Biden administration. Meanwhile, if you were a pro-life clinic, you could have firebombed workplaces, and they didn't care until we forced them to at least give some lip service to it.
I want to take a few calls. We have three calls lined up and about 5 minutes of airtime. I'm going to do my best. But first up, know you've been on hold for nearly 40 minutes and know that I apologize for that. But you were the second champion, actually, and the only second caller is Martin in North Carolina. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. I'll try to make this quick. Two quick questions. With what Tulsi Gabbard had uncovered and released out, does this potentially raise the whole crossfire hurricane situation to a possible subversion or attempted coup or even acts of treason? And with the other gentleman that called earlier, and you were talking about the whistleblower, is that the same whistleblower that Adam Schiff kept on taunting everybody about that never appeared?
Yes, 100%, Martin. Same whistleblower. Adam Schiff was in contact with him, and then that quote-unquote whistleblower lied to the inspector general to try and get this moving quicker and being turned over to Congress because Congress didn't know about it. It was all coordinated. But back to your first question. Remember, when Tulsi Gabbard started talking about the 2016 grand conspiracy, she called it a treasonous conspiracy. She herself has used those words. Whether or not the DOJ will eventually get to a treason prosecution, that's a different story.
And have enough of these people been pardoned?
That's also, we'll find out.
We'll find out who's involved. Remember how many pardons that came down in the last second.
And Joe Biden did those blanket pardons you could have just conceivably say, I mean, I read an email once. I think I'm covered by this. So that's another issue as well.
Yeah.
But this does open up the door, I feel like, this is my opinion and analysis, by her connecting the two events, that one of the witnesses for the whistleblower for the impeachment was also one of the authors of the intelligence community assessment in 2016. That seems like the two are now connected. And so that's very interesting when it comes to statute of limitations and conspiracy type charges that we could see. We'll find out.
All right, a couple more calls. We'll do our best. Let's go to Ray in California. Last question about California. Go ahead.
Yeah, on the Tulsi Gabbard case, I mean, we got a few of those people named. Schiff is a senator right now. If he's removed, we could fight for another seat. But you know, we have obstacles like the election process, and we call them the commie jihadists, formerly known as Dems. But right now they're passing a law, Anti-Shirley Act. So, thank you.
Yeah, Ray, obviously California, always an uphill battle.
Well, California is in a weird spot right now because,
you've been seeing the news, there's a lot.
We know, you know, one of the lead people telling everyone to release all the Epstein files. I don't know his name. I've already forgotten it. What was his name? We know that Eric Swalwell is now resigning from Congress because of allegations of egregious crimes, not just inappropriate workplace behavior, which would be bad for a congressman or anyone, but actual crimes against women. Meanwhile, he was trying to weaponize the Epstein files to get his political agenda.
Breaking news on that happening as we speak right now. I mean, we're not getting into the details just because, look, we have another topic to cover. But understand, there is more and more and more that's coming out on that. And, you know, I guess, unfortunately or fortunately, he won't be a name that we'll have to deal with too much more from here on out.
But back to Adam Schiff, I think he has his eyes on running for president.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, all of these guys, they definitely have presidential ambitions. Let's go to Irene, line three, last call of the day, and I feel like it's an appropriate one to take us home. Irene, go ahead.
I was just calling to say, tell everyone to pray. Let's encourage everyone to pray because God is in control. And he's saying, let me have it and I will do my work.
Irene, thank you for calling. If you couldn't hear Irene, if you had some connection issues there, she's just saying we all just need to pray. Leave it up to God. Of course, the ACLJ work continues on, but that is the most important thing. I ask you to pray not only for our country, I ask you to pray for the work that we do here. Pray for people that support the ACLJ. Pray for people that don't support the work of the ACLJ, and then we'll have some hearts and minds opened.
But also to your point, Irene, yes, we do need to pray. We do need to trust God and put our faith in God. But one thing your dad, I've heard for my entire life, him talk about is the story from Luke about the persistent widow, the parable from Jesus, where there was an unjust judge and she kept knocking and she kept knocking until finally that unjust judge granted her request. That is the work of the ACLJ. We do not stop fighting with the talents and the tools and the ability that God gave us, gave our attorneys, gave this media team to fight for justice and to keep knocking even when we see injustice in this world. That is what we keep fighting for.
Yep, that's going to do it. Absolutely. And so we encourage you to, like I said, I always ask you for, of course, your financial support and all of those things. But if there's one thing I can always ask you for and that we need the most is your prayers. You know, this team is hard at work, whether that's our media team, our legal team, or everyone in between, a tech team, to make sure that our message is getting out there, to make sure your message is being represented in the halls of Congress, United Nations, the Director of National Intelligence, the European Center, the ACLJ Jerusalem, and that there is the L&J, the Law and Justice of the American Center for Law and Justice, is being continually fought for around the world. That is only because people like you. So as you say your prayers, include our team on that as well. And you know, look at all the incredible resources. None of it is at a cost. It's all available for free at aclj.org. Talk to you tomorrow.